Welcome to the Women in Business Impact Lab podcast. Maximize your leadership potential and professional advancement and be inspired. We're delighted to be your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development from a women in business perspective. We share our original research, explore industry and workforce trends, and interview female executives, allies, and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things women in business, leadership challenges, talent management, organizational development, change management, and diversity and inclusion.
Lindsay Lewis, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to be with you. I'm joined by my co-host, Angela Schill. I'm John Westover. We're south of Salt Lake City in Orem, Utah, and Lindsay is joining us from Charlotte, North Carolina. We're thrilled to have the chance to talk with Lindsay today about diversity and inclusion and empowering women in finance. As we get started, I wanted to share Lindsay's bio with everybody. Lindsay Lewis has built a career around women and money. She not only helps women take charge of their finances as a chartered financial consultant and CFP professional, but she also stands as a champion for diverse women in financial service industries in her role as senior director and chair of the American College Center for Women in Financial Services, a premier center of excellence focused on research and advocacy within the American College of Financial Services. That's just a really short snippet, Lindsay, of your background, but I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience anything else before we really just dive on into the broader conversation.
Yeah, I know that title is a mouthful, but essentially what my work comes down to is promoting, advancing, and advocating for women in finance. And I do this through thought leadership, education, and research. And so it's been really fun to get into this role, especially from my time being at Utah Valley University and now working at a non-traditional college, helping non-traditional students with their learning journeys. So it is very exciting work, and I can't wait to dive a little bit deeper.
And Angela, before you dive on in, Lindsay, can I just ask, are you a product of our PFP program here?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad in the Personal Financial Planning program, so the CFP registered program, and I'm a two-time alum. I also received my MBA with an emphasis in business management as well from UVU.
Ooh, I have lots of questions. I'm just going to dive in. But I hope that you'll share in the middle of this when and if it probably will just come up. I'd love to hear more about, we all would, your journey to get to where you are. Maybe this is wrapped in. So just talking about innovation in financial services, you've positioned yourself as a catalyst for change within the financial services industry, and you've been focusing on modernization and the integration of diverse talent. Can you share specific examples of how innovation has played a key role in attracting and retaining quality talent, specifically diverse women with entrepreneurial mindsets within the financial services sector?
Absolutely. I will start off with my origin story because that plays a big role into this. So I grew up in Orem, Utah. I drove on 800 West, if you're familiar, for elementary school, junior high school, and college. So that's how I got to UVU.
Are you a Mountain View alum as well?
I am. I'm a Bruin. Yes. Yes. Love it or hate it. I loved it. It was great. But I grew up, I have six brothers, no sisters. And so kind of the idea around gender norms was not in my household because any of the chores that my brothers did, I was expected to do as well. My parents definitely, you know, anything that they dreamed of doing, I also could dream of doing. So that was really around some of this empowerment that happened. And then growing up in Orem at the time that I grew up there, I didn't see a lot of role models of income producing women outside of the home. And my mom was a breadwinner in our household, which was kind of atypical for that time. And I saw the importance of education. And so because my mom had a college degree and was an accountant, she was employable and was able to provide for our family, which was absolutely amazing. And so I went to UVU and I'm like, I'm going to become an accountant because I know I'm always going to have a job. And through a series of events, I found the personal financial planning program and I hopped into that program because they said I had too much of a personality to just be an accountant, which one of my brothers is an accountant. So we'll leave that there. But I hopped into that program. And what's really cool about UVU and the personal financial planning program is that it really personifies the engaged learning that UVU talks about. And the amazing thing there was that I had the opportunity to go to industry events with financial professionals during my undergrad program. So I was able to travel to 5 different conferences all over the US, paid for by either sponsors or the school, which really broadened my exposure to the industry at a very young age, like, you know, 19, 20, 21. And what I saw when I went to all of these events is it was an ocean of men, right? And I'm like, where are all the women at? Because this career is so great for women and diverse talent and underrepresented groups, because everything you learn is applicable to your own life. So that is extremely helpful. And two, there's such a need. There's a huge demand. There are, you know, hundreds of trillions of dollars that are in transition. But the most recent stat is that $30 trillion will go to the hands of women over the next decade. And 70% of widows will fire their financial professional within 24 months because they are, you know, don't like working with that advisor. And we have the nation as a whole is shifting to a minority majority by 2050. And you have 100,000 financial professionals in this Cerulli data that are saying that they plan to retire in the next years, which is 35 to 40% of the total workforce. So you have a $30 trillion market, you have people leaving, the number of professionals that came into financial services last year was -0.25%. So like fewer people are coming in than going out. And you have the changing demographics. So I was like, this is such a great opportunity. Where are all the women at? And that started me on this path and this passion for advocacy. So I've worked at what's called a registered investment advisory firm, which sounds like a person, but it's an entity that helps people manage their money as well as institutions. So I help build retirement plans, which sounds super boring, but I actually would help companies come up with their 401k solutions for their clients or for their, you know, employees. And so I'd help with investment selections and how the plan was designed. You know, there's lots of things that companies can do to make retirement more of a picture for their employees, but they have barriers of like, you got to be there for 12 months, or you have to be, you know, you can't offer it to part-time employees, and like thinking about innovative ways that way. So then I've helped work with high net worth folks with their financial goals. But along this whole path, I've been super passionate about young women and women getting into finance. And so I've actually hosted an event on UVU campus, and we're going into our sixth year called Polished. It's a women in business event, and it's to learn from and be inspired by women like you. And really the inception of this was me growing up there, right? Like I didn't see a lot of women who I could look up to. I'm a mom of 2 kids. I literally was just in New York this week and got back, and we work it out with me and my partner in order for us to like thrive together. And so I created this event really to help young women just see someone who's 1 to 2 steps ahead of them and ask those challenging questions of how do you get a raise? Like maybe what do I wear to work? Or how do you negotiate that first salary, or what employee benefits should you ask for? And so that is what got me so passionate about doing this in the industry. And now in my role, I'm able to do that on a national level, as well as doing my work with UVU. So it is really around all of these data and these facts. And I think what gets me going every day is that I'm a certified financial planner professional, and the percentage of women CFPs has not changed in 2 decades. We got to change something. We got to do it, you know? So that's really what my passion came from.
That's really crazy. That surprises me because we have seen not tons of movement, but we've seen some movement in some of the other kind of traditionally male dominated fields. And you're saying there's really not much of any movement in financial planning?
Well, in like specific designations, there's definitely been a lot of increase of more women within financial services. And so if you include home office and not just client facing advisors, we're getting closer to that gender parity number. However, if you're looking at those who are credentialed and in client facing roles at larger institutions, that's where you still see some of that discrepancy. But those other careers, let's say doctors, lawyers, accountants, et cetera, they actually started specific campaigns in the late 90s, early 2000s to start helping girls think about that at earlier ages. As of right now, girls' confidence in math peaks at age 9. They start self-selecting out of STEM-related fields as early as age 13. And girls as young as 5 start to think that boys are smarter than them. So you have all of these, you know, cultural and different beliefs that are being brought up in different settings. And so in financial services, there's not really like pop culture and, you know, media related that you think of when you think of a financial professional. Like you think of Wolf of Wall Street or The Big Short, which the work that I did with my clients, like I'm crying over a table of like shared emotions. Like it's not the same. So that's, you know, the battles that we have, but it's really exciting to see some movements towards, you know, more gender parity. However, there's still a ton of areas of opportunity.
Can I just say too, thank you so much for not modeling your career after like The Big Short.
Thank you. I mean, no offense to any investment bankers that are listening to this, but y'all are different animals, you know, different breed.
Oh man. Well, I have to say, I got to go to Polish, the most recent event. It was incredible. It was electric energy. It was so fun to be there. That's incredible work that you're doing, what you've started.
Thank you so much. And it's so interesting because it started in the little center stage area in its first year. And, you know, we just did that one room and it's grown. We kept it through COVID. We went virtual. We came back in person and we're really focused on finding these women who are also local to Utah, because we know that anywhere between 70 to 80% of UVU students will stay within the state. And so it is really important to make sure that they start creating networking opportunities and connections to meet new folks. And it is also very important because I don't know if you know all of the stats around women in the workforce in the state of Utah, but there's definitely a lot of room for improvement. And we rank near or at the lowest for women's equality in the workplace. And so it is also to have a voice and talk about things that people don't talk about, where, you know, your male coworker who does the same role that has the same credentials is getting paid more than you. And how do you take that to HR to have that conversation?
The questions, the secret questions of the universe.
The secret questions. It's mainly just asking. That is the secret.
Just to do it.
Just to do it.
Talking about that, just empowering women in finance in general, what have you done in encountering different challenges and what are the roadblocks that you've faced as you've marched through this incredible career?
Yeah, I've faced roadblocks pretty much on a daily basis. And I guess with my growing up experience of being an athlete, I'm like, okay, I did gymnastics all growing up. I'm like, you fall off the balance beam, we get back up. You know, it's just that mentality. But lots of headwinds, especially with the rollback of affirmative action, we've definitely seen it, that is for college admissions. However, you're seeing corporate policies starting to roll back D&I initiatives. And so consequently, like they don't want to ruffle any feathers or, you know, get in trouble or get sued. And so you see some like DE&I officers being eliminated as roles, and you're seeing the amount of budgets that's going towards that, you know, circling back. So you hit that, you know, get that headwind. Additionally, sometimes I have found that getting great male allies is extremely beneficial. But sometimes if you don't have those great male allies, they'll look at people with like doing events or community things. Sometimes they're like, oh, that's cute. But it's like, no, like y'all do the same thing on the golf course. We're just doing it in a different environment that like doesn't require us, you know, shooting nine holes, right? So it's rethinking this and finding your male allies, the sponsors, the mentors, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then also you just have a lot of, whether it's cultural beliefs, systemic beliefs around like women and money. I read this book called Ladies of the Ticker, which talks about the history of Wall Street through the lens of a woman. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely fascinating because some of the investment strategies or beliefs that, you know, get thrown on women, like women are more conservative. You go back and it's their investment bankers since the late 1700s were putting them in investments that were more conservative, not necessarily explaining all of the outcomes. So it's, you know, you'd have a male heiress versus a female heiress, and they would put the male heir in more equity exposure, which means stocks, growth, et cetera. And they put the women in more bonds, which is more conservative, right? And so their account balances would change exponentially just over time. And then women look at money differently. But if you look at to the stats, like women are actually better money managers. They outperform in investment performance. They outperform in a lot of different arenas because they're less likely to make moves, et cetera.
Yeah.
But you still have this belief of like, you can interview men and women, and not including non-binary people in this equation. And they'll say like, who do you think is a better money manager, men or women? And they'll say men, even though the stats show that women are. So it's, you have lots of headwinds. But what's really exciting is, you know, using this platform and other platforms and other leaders to just build awareness, right? You don't know what you don't know. And we have conscious and unconscious bias. And so it's just unfolding. And during this process, I've learned so much about myself, but especially other people, and, you know, giving people grace and the benefit of the doubt, but there's definitely a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, I think about that always in the back of my head. I'm thinking, how do we, when we're making decisions that don't fit the data, how do we broach that? How do we bring the awareness out? And in what ways has that been, how is that successful?
Yeah, I think it's first knowing the data, right? If, you know, you're a parent or you're an auntie or an uncle or whomever, like knowing some of these stats, especially about little girls, you can definitely help shape that narrative. It's so fascinating because I'm such a feminist. And my son the other day came home from school and he was like, boys are stronger, girls are smarter. And I'm like, where did you learn this? Like, where's this belief coming from? Like, he's 6 years old. I'm like, you got to tell me, like, did your teacher say this? Did your classmates say this? But it's just even having that awareness and understanding some of the issues that face women, like women's issues are everybody's issues because like the impact on women's healthcare impacts men's healthcare, like it impacts a lot of things. And so I think just learning some of the statistics, there's some great resources out there, but especially if you're a listener who's in Utah, like looking at women's equality across the board, learning some of those stats, then you'll be like, okay, yeah, when we vote bills that can be perceived as anti-DE&I bills, how does that impact not only, you know, my partner or my spouse, but how does that impact my daughter or, you know, the communities of color that are in this state or wherever I'm residing? So just knowing some of those statistics, and it doesn't take a lot of effort, and you might be able to find like a TikTok channel that will go through it too. So I think just getting some education on it.
Yeah. I think that is just the awareness that you've brought to the conversation helps so much, and having the conversation and knowing where to look and just maybe where we can individually make changes. And, you know, I look at my boys, I have these adult males that I am so proud of that are, you know, they're feminists, and it's so great to see their changes happening. It's fun to for me to see that in my children in that generation.
Yes, we're definitely making a lot of strides, but there's when you have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years stacked up, you're like, okay.
Yeah, it's a
got
big
to work
ship.
Through this over
It's a
time.
big ship to turn.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and you highlighted the challenge in Utah. And there's we could spend forever, like all day talking about the reasons behind this. it's a very complicated topic, but the bottom line is, yes, women's equality in Utah is abysmal. We rate in the last or near the last in most significant categories in the country. And it's a real issue that people need to pay attention to, because sometimes, you know, I try to be a male ally, and I don't know how well I do at that, but sometimes I get frustrated because I'm like, not only I'm not surprised when other men do or say things that are a little bit misogynistic or sexist, because unfortunately that's how, you know, a lot of men are, but I see it from women a lot too, in the state, and who are very happy with the state of being and actually push against, you know, what I would view as positive, movement, you know, in a more healthy direction. And so it's a really complicated thing, and let's just acknowledge it for what it is, recognize that these are challenges that we have to collectively work at, resolving together. You also mentioned, you know, some of the legislation and things like that that are happening around the country, and Utah is definitely part of that. We're not immune, and in fact, there were some interesting bills passed this legislative cycle that impact schools and institutions of higher education, and diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, et cetera. All of this makes this work even more complicated than it already was, but, you know, now it's even more complicated because it's become so politicized and polarizing to even have these conversations.
Yes. Well, we thank you for being a male ally, because you're showing up here. And if you're spreading the word, we're all about that. But I think it's really important with that comment around women impacting other women. So in some of our work that we've done, we put a name on that and we call it horizontal oppression. So that's where people who are in marginalized groups actually attack other people who are part of that same marginalized group. And that's because, you know, if they're, let's say, aspiring professionals and they think that there's only one seat at the table, right? And this woman versus me. And I can attest to this. Like, I felt this way when I was working in Utah, because I was like, wait, if I'm going to be the lead woman here and then another woman gets hired, like, how's that going to be? Mm-hmm. And instead of having a more collective, like, even if she took that seat, it's still benefiting women as a collective whole. So also for women, it is really important to do some of this introspective work, because it's, you know, am I feeling some of this rub or aggression or jealousy or emotion because I am, you know, jealous of her, or am I like worried about me not progressing in a specific way? And having that open dialogue, and also just, you know, inventorying yourself. And I think that's what's really important. And as we move forward, it's going to take men, women, non-binary folks to help women all advance. And the data shows, like, when nothing bad happens, when women have more money, you actually see them in more philanthropic roles. You see them, you know, giving at different levels, volunteering, participating at different levels. And so this elevates the whole community. You elevate a woman, you elevate the community. So it's interesting, like, having grown up there, I don't live there right now, but I still, like, I fly across the country to do these events on campus at UVU, because I'm so passionate about women understanding the impact that they can have, and that there's an and in life, right? You can be a caregiver and a career person. You can be a mom and a career person. You can be a volunteer and a career person. And so can she, and so can she. And so it's about having more of an abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset that can creep up.
I think, I'm going to let you with this. I have a couple of questions, but I'll let you take it where you want to go. I've seen you doing this as we've been talking with you, Lindsay, in terms of dispelling myths, which is what you do on your podcast, Women Working in Wealth. Is that right?
Yep, that's okay. Right.
So I'm converted to that already. I'm going to be, you've got a new listener right here.
Well, it's just on YouTube now. So I also in part, I'm a co-host on a podcast called Shares, which is another one. But yes, I love to dispel myths. There's a lot of myths around financial services. And when you look into the research around how folks trust financial professionals, like it's like used car salesman plus financial professional, right? And the work that financial professionals are doing are really truly impacting people's lives. It's just that someone's auntie or uncle or mom or dad or brother or sister or cousin or person or human in their life has been financially exploited. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are, you know, bad financial professionals that exist because it's just the way that it is. However, majority of them get into this industry to help and serve people. I actually was part of a research study about traits of successful advisors, and 60% of them said they get into financial services to help and serve people. However, when you see the depictions or you think of an insurance agent or, you know, an investment advisor, like, is that what's coming to mind? And so that's why I really want to dispel myths. Also dispelling myths around what it's like being a career woman within the field, because for some women, they've actually haven't felt a lot of headwinds being a woman in the industry. They actually have felt a lot of tailwinds, that they've been extremely successful and they've found good allies and good partners and sponsors and mentors. And so I love dispelling myths because sometimes they're just wrong, right? And like, we have this belief system and it's like totally inaccurate. Like, we don't trust certain institutions or something like that, where if you look at the data, it's like, actually, no, people are here to help and serve you. And it's very interesting because we did a research study around Black women's trust in financial services, and it's abysmal. Like, no, they don't trust financial services. And then you run into, you know, these different marginalized communities who just don't have trust in financial institutions, which, you know, the stock market has been the most consistent way to create and build generational wealth across the board. And if you don't have trust into that system, and you're like, where are you saving your money? And if they are unbanked or underbanked, or they're not choosing investment accounts, that actually impacts not only their life, but their kids' life and their grandkids' lives and all of that. So dispelling myths really can be an opportunity to create more generational wealth and more wealth in the hands of women, underrepresented groups, the queer community, et cetera.
And in addition to this, you just brought up your study, your recent research that you were doing, and you've done a lot of initiatives when it comes to diversity and inclusion, and you've been recognized for doing this. I love you got this. I just saw you got this award, Utah Valley University Alumni Impact Award. And so thank you for what you're doing, and congratulations on being recognized. And I've seen there's more than that in your world in terms of being recognize. And I just want to know, what do you think are the most effective strategies that helps financial institutions to bring and improve these diversity and inclusion into the workspace and within their ranks?
Well, I appreciate the congratulations. And truly, my work at UVU, I really just want to impact my daughter or another young woman. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not in it for me. I really am about how do we change the future and finding ways to innovate and make differences for financial institutions. If you're a business owner, or you know someone who's a business owner, especially if they're in Utah, it really is the introspection first, right? Like, look around, do some inventory. I've worked with some of the largest institutions in the US when it comes to financial related, and they don't track gender statistics across their financial professionals. So they don't know exactly how many women versus men versus non-binary people mm-hmm. are working there. And so it's like, how are you going to know that you can make a difference if you have no benchmark, right? Yeah. And even if your benchmark is poor or low, but at least you have like starting ground, right? So it is that introspection. There is a great resource by Kathleen Kingsbury. And she has an assessment that you could see how female friendly your firm is. It's like on a score of 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you have paid parental and maternity leave? Do you, you know, have options for childcare? Do you have flexible work schedules? Do you allow people to work remotely? A lot of these institutions, especially like post-COVID world, are, you know, making everybody return back to the office, which for me, going from an in-person employee to now fully remote, I have gotten 2 hours of my day back, not commuting, not going to, you know, pick up my kid from childcare. And I, in those 2 hours, I can do some of the domestic tasks, emotional tasks, or work out, do something for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I am living a more full well-being person because I have more time capacity. And so it's firms just taking that look and making a difference. And also, if you're there at different institutions, you know, have a voice and make comments. You know, there have been places I've worked at, I'm like, y'all don't have maternity leave, so what are we going to do? And this was pre before I had children, you know, it's like, what am I signing up for? Like, what does this look like? And so it is so fascinating that like the US is, you know, such a developed country that doesn't have maternal care. That is like a whole can of worms itself. But for institutions, it really is that introspection, listening to employees. You see like the quiet quitting and everything that's happening right now. And that's because they aren't listening, right? They're like, we don't want to go back to work, you know, like to the office, right? And they're like, okay, everyone's back in the office at least 4 days a week. And it's, you know, like when you see like productivity numbers had increased going to remote work, and now you're like, you know, like water cooler talk takes away actually like 27 more minutes of my time versus like me like ironing through something. So it really is that introspection, listening to the employees, and then implementation, right? Like I have taken a trillion different surveys in my life, and I'm like, how many of these things have we implemented? And really implementing it. And so I commend, you know, any institution that is really taking those steps and those initiatives and keeping diversity in the forefront of your mind, because McKinsey research, lots of research show that you can have double digit increase in revenue, productivity, all of this when you have more diverse teams. However, you know, some of these firms don't feel the pain of, you know, the changing demographic quite yet. And so I'm just like front seat of like when people start leaving, then they're like, okay, we got to do all of this. So I think there's definitely room for opportunity. And I love to be a resource for anyone. I do keep my calendar open for phone calls to have conversations. And especially for some of my male allies that are unsure of, you know, the territory, or if they're going to sound offensive or something like that, we can have a conversation and talk about it to make sure you can work through some of those details, so you can go into those conversations confidently and understanding, you know, someone with different lived experience than yourself.
Wonderful. Lindsay, this has just been a really fascinating conversation. I note the time. We need to let you go and get on with your busy day here in just a minute. But before we wrap things up for today, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
Yes. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Lindsay Lewis, CFP. You can follow me on your social media platform of choice at Influencing Finance, and currently working at the American College of Financial Services, where we are building financial knowledge to benefit society. And ultimately, if you didn't listen to the last, you know, 20 minutes, really what's important is for you to take the time to do that introspection, to do that inventory, and see how you can better help yourself, but also the community at large. And nothing bad happens when women have more money.
Wonderful. Thank you again. Thank you, Angela. It's been a great pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Lindsay can do for you. And as always, we hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And we hope you all have a great week. Thanks again for joining us for this episode of the Women in Business Impact Lab podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and that you have a great week.